Causes, the PKI and Security podcast, where a pair of industry veterans talk about all matters digital certificates and PKI. I'm Tim Callen, Chief Compliance Officer at Sigtigo, and I'm here with Jason Sirocco, CTO of PKI at Sigtigo. How you doing, Jay?
Doing great, Tim. Thanks for having me.
So we wanted to talk about a news item that made a lot that earned a lot of press in late March, and I believe got a lot of headlines, and we just want to talk through and clarify exactly what went on with it in one neat encapsulated place. And what we are talking, of course, is the Okta breach. If my memory serves, I think it was March 22nd. Does that sound right, Jay?
March 22nd, Tim, is, right, I believe, the date that the attackers released screenshots, and right, that's what set off a lot of these events.
Right. That's when the story broke. Right. It's not – certainly there was stuff that happened in advance of that and arguably possibly well in advance of that, but that's when the story broke. So, okay. So it's March 22nd. People get up. They're expecting a normal news cycle, and instead they get some news. What is the news that we learned, Jay?
What we saw on Twitter – was some screenshots that were attributed to a hacking group. I'm only going to mention their name once just because I'm not even sure the proper pronunciation, but Lapsus, L-A-P-S-U-S $ is one of the names that they go by. Microsoft even has a different name for them. So for the rest of this podcast, let's call them the attackers.
Sure.
The important part to this is that the screenshots seemed to suggest that they had achieved a pretty high level amount of privilege within Okta's system. So in other words, Okta being the big,
single sign-on,
Okta being the big single sign-on cloud provider. And of course, so many enterprises use them for probably very good reason. And these screenshots, as I say, seem to suggest that the attackers had achieved some level of super administrator privileges within their environment. And I think, Tim, what's important to note here, and this is what has come out through a lot of the news, is that the victim in this case was not Okta Systems directly. However, it was what was in the initial Twitter release by the CEO of Okta had basically said, yes, this is one of our co-processors. And what that turned out to mean was it was a third-party support agency called Sitel that actually had been compromised. So what we've learned, Tim, and I'll just spell a little bit of the detail and we could talk through some of this. Looks like what the initial facts are, and these are the important sort of high-level facts, is that somebody at Sitel was socially engineered at some point, and their credentials had made it onto the dark web. The attackers, the second set of attackers being this Lapsus group, used those credentials to then be able to get into systems within that third-party provider, who had, of course, the ability to do things such as resetting passwords of Okta customers.
Right. And at that point, once you can do that, basically, the implication to me, at least, would be that the entire Okta environment might be available to you. And once the entire Okta environment is available to you, since what it does fundamentally is give you access to other systems, then the implication there is that there might be other downstream systems that you could gain access to as well. Is that right?
That's right, Tim. And some of what we've seen subsequent to the initial news releases is that, yes, there were some other movements that the attacker had made like that. Not just within the systems of this Sitel, but also within some of those customers. And so, this is me being very careful because there's a lot of information floating around the Twitterverse and in news releases that are based on leaked information from incident handling reports and what with all, Tim. So I want to keep this at a slightly higher level than just the actual facts of the attack, because that's interesting enough. But I think what's not talked about enough is the actual series of responses by Okta to this event, right? Yeah. So you had the initial response from the CEO, which said, hey, yeah, this is something that affected a co-processor of ours, a third party, that happened back in January. We're aware of it, and we had seen an initial investigation report.
And my recollection is that they said very early on, like maybe in that first message from the CEO, this is not an ongoing attack. There's not an ongoing threat, correct?
Exactly, Tim. Yeah. Exactly. And so then, of course, the Twitterverse and others basically put a little bit of pressure and said, geez, some of those screenshots are kind of scary, right? It suggests that a lot more went on. And how can you be absolutely sure that there wasn't something worse, or that you do have an issue with some of your customers? Well, later on October 22nd, Okta apparently received the complete investigation report from Sitel and ended up revealing that, yeah, you know, a certain percentage of customers probably needed to be contacted and might be affected.
Right. Now, this is the same day, later March 22nd, correct?
Yeah. And so then there, you know, a little later, the exact timing, I'm not, you know, that mm-hmm. part of it's not in my head. But what I can tell you is that there was a Zoom call between Okta and interested parties where, yes, it was revealed that 366 customers might be affected. So it did go backwards, you know, from the initial, there's nothing for anybody to do.
Right.
And no, oops, it looks like now that we've looked into this, it's worse than we thought. And these other customers, you know, a certain percentage of our customers needed to be contacted, and we're going to go do that. And so that left a bad taste in some people's mouths, right? And I think that was the big story here, the big non-technical story, was just how I think, and this is just me guessing as to what happened. Maybe somebody from Okta could correct me, but you know, I think the initial response was, yeah, this happened to a third party. It was pretty small and contained, and we're aware of it. And then once the screenshots were released by the attackers and scrutiny started to emerge, Okta looked into it further and realized, oops, there's something bigger here. And I think, Tim, that's the heart of the story right now.
Yeah, and I think also another thing that I noticed that was interesting about this is that the initial screenshot poster, who had some, you know, some form of social media channel that they used to put these screenshots up, actually went up and put up subsequent posts basically attempting to discredit the claims that Okta was making about this breach, and in particular attempting to convincingly convey that though Okta is saying there is no ongoing threat and it wasn't really a big deal, there actually is an ongoing threat and it actually was a big deal. And so you got this kind of debate happening in these two different channels between the official word of the company and this, you know, attacker, this committer of a breach, this breach attacker, who is on their own channel disputing the things that the company is saying.
Correct, Tim. And in fact, what was interesting is beyond just what amounted to a correction by the attackers,
right?
Which, you know, kind of looked like bragging, but really it was an admonishment of Okta for, hey, you're underplaying this.
Yeah.
Within that same time period, March 22nd, Microsoft actually wrote and published a blog about what they call Dev0537. That's their name for the attackers.
Dev0537. Okay.
That's right. Dev0537. And what was very interesting is that, you see, I'll make the small note here. In Okta's own blog, for their online response, they had said, yeah, there was a compromised laptop at our, you know, third party. And even the in the note from the attackers that was part of the admonishment had said, no, we were using something else. You know, it wasn't a laptop. It was actually, you know, a virtual desktop type of system. And Microsoft went on to actually help to confirm what the attackers were saying, making it clear that no, these guys prefer to do things sort of the easy way, which is to harvest credentials that are available in the dark web. And then subsequent to that, start harvesting things like VPN credentials, VDI credentials, RDP credentials, going as far as sometimes to use MFA replay attacks, SIM swapping, etc., and using insiders. And it turns out that, yeah, in the case of Okta with their third party, it looks like it was RDP credentials had been harvested with something called the Redline malware, which is a stealer malware, which basically would be able to potentially steal those credentials. So I think, you know, it's really a case of not looking at the implications carefully enough. And I don't know if Okta was downplaying it in their own minds, or, you know, if they had legitimate reason to downplay it as much as they did. But I think it ended up
just being spun.
I'm not even going to speculate. I'm just saying what the possibilities could be.
Right.
But certainly it turns out that, yeah, the implications were larger than had been initially talked about. And as time went on, more and more of the facts came out. And then, Tim, just a factoid here, but, you know, the Twitterverse was so rich in information with all this stuff. It turns out that initial incident report, which I think somebody had claimed had been done by Mandiant, actually went into fairly good detail about what the actual events were by the attackers to be able to achieve their objective. And that, you know, brought up a lot of information that was pretty consistent with the screenshots that we ended up seeing from the attackers initially on March 22nd. So the story continues, Tim. And okay, just for those of you who haven't followed along super closely, there have been arrests related to this attack. And apparently, and this was, I think Brian Krebs has reported on this. I know the BBC has reported on this. But an unnamed person in the UK has been arrested, as well as apparently some of this person's compatriots in South Africa. The reason we don't know the name of the person in the UK that was arrested is because they're only 16 or 17 years old.
Oh, geez. Okay. Gotcha. So that's interesting, because that gives you a very different profile, right? We all have this image in our mind of the sophisticated attacker being a career criminal who is probably in some place where law enforcement is relatively weak, or at least cyber crime law enforcement is relatively weak. And what they are doing is they are, you know, capitalizing on this status that they have. But that's not what this is at all. This almost sounds like your classic, you know, computer prodigy hacking for the joy of it, including this bragging, if you will, or this correcting the record aspect of what was going on.
Tim, let me attempt to frame this, you know, because you're giving a couple different ways to potentially think about it. Here's the way that I've thought about it after now looking at all this. And I think there's a little more background I have to give, because this set of attackers is also attributed with having attacked NVIDIA, as well as, you know, Microsoft itself. Apparently they lost some source code to this organization.
Okay.
And I could just go on and on. In fact, I don't even know if anybody truly has the full list of organizations that have been affected by this particular hacking group. And one of the things that seems to be common is that this group is successful. Fairly boastful. They're not afraid to communicate. In fact, you know, admonishing Okta during, you know,
right.
So in other words, their methods of communication were not like some stealth organization. And if you take a look at those Mandiant notes, right, those supposed Mandiant notes, and I'm not claiming they're true. I'm just claiming a lot of people have read them. And they seem to line up. One of the very common reactions by people that I respect in the cybersecurity community have basically said, look, their methodologies are pretty rough. Mm. In other words, you know, the direct usage of Mimikatz, the direct usage, you know, of certain other kinds of systems to be able to get in, you know, steal credentials, etc., were, you know, if you were the pro career criminal, super hacker type, you might use other tools. You might use other methodologies, and in order to be more secret, or in order to be more whatever. And, you know, just the fact that these guys chose the easy way, Tim. This is expressed very clearly in the Microsoft blog, and I really invite people to read that on their blog about DEV0537, published March 22nd. You know, this perhaps, Tim, is the lesson to be learned here, and maybe the crux to this podcast, which is I think everybody has a particular mindset about what hackers are like. You know, even certain categories of hackers and what they're like. But there's absolutely, absolutely a type of hacker out there that's very, very scary, who doesn't have to be ultra skilled, you know, doesn't have to be gifted, doesn't have to be any of the things that we typically attribute to these types of people.
Right.
What we really need to keep in mind is perhaps cybersecurity is so poor overall that very, very minimal, somewhat what you know, in air quotes, easy methodologies to use are the ones that are perhaps the most effective against modern organizations with a lot of resources, because there's still a lot of back doors opened.
Yeah.
And this idea of the genius hacker, it's not necessary.
So yeah, I mean, one of the things that occurs to me, and I think about this a lot, is if you're a large, sophisticated, born in the cloud enterprise, Okta is a perfect example of this.
Yeah.
Your attack surface is vast, right? Everything's digital. You've got many different systems and vendors, and they're all attacking to each other. And in a lot of ways, the attacker has a badly unfair advantage, which is they only need to find one chink in the armor. They need to only find one way in. And you need to armor everything without exception. And one little seam or one little, you know, molecular gap is enough to let somebody in. So your protection needs to be perfect. And that's hard. That's a hard thing to do.
Well, Tim, I'll tell you what, I'll even narrow it a little bit. Not only do you know, obviously, this asymmetric problem of cybersecurity, mm-hmm. which is what you're describing, absolutely yeah. true, 100% true. But I guess what I'm trying to point out is that it's even a bit worse than that, because I think people get the sense that even the basics are being covered by competent defenders. And I'm not sure that that's entirely true.
Okay.
And so therefore, if you've got legit username passwords to very, very important administrators floating around the dark web, you're already sunk.
Sure. Right. There, the battle was lost sometime in the past when those credentials were harvested, not when they're used. At that point, you already yeah. lost the battle. You're just waiting for the follow on.
And not only harvested, right? Because as you say, Tim, that's if you're dealing in a username and password world, that's an entire possibility, right? We've talked about this multiple times in this podcast. Keyloggers, mm-hmm. stealer malware, right? All these things. Username passwords are so bad for so many reasons. We've mentioned that so many times. The problem is that these were searchable credentials. And what was very interesting to me is that there was a group, and let me get their name. It's in my notes here, Tim. There was a group that actually had looked up the dark web after this attack had been made available. The information had been made available, and they looked up some of these, coprocessors of Okta, and actually were able to find those credentials on the dark web, which is just amazing to me. So in yeah. other words, you know, there's a lesson to organizations out there. You know, there are professional, legit, white hat type of groups who scour the dark web for these kinds of things. Maybe you should plug into that level of intelligence and get feedback on a regular basis. Hey, do I have any of my credentials floating out there right now? I think that's a big lesson learned from this.
Yeah. So a couple more questions. One that probably is very predictable, which is presumably if they had been not using a simple shared secret authentication model, that this attack would not have succeeded. Is that right?
Well, if you take a look at how the attack was actually done in this case, that is correct. That is correct. A stronger form of authentication, such as a true passwordless, probably would have defeated this.
Yeah.
The one of the issues, of course, that could be argued here is that, hey, this exact same attack group has been known to actually put out ads and hire people internally to these organizations to do things such as, click yes on a push notification for MFA or to type in an OTP on behalf of the attackers, right? So in other words, these guys also use insider attacks, which can bypass some of that. But on the other hand, as I say, the attack as it was done would have been defeated by a stronger form of authentication. You're correct.
Right. But let's return to that, because that was another thing I was going to bring up. I remember seeing one of these ads, and it's pretty incredible. Like, literally, they are posting advertisements asking people to reach out to them if they're interested in selling access into the trusted systems of the company they work for.
That's just correct.
Recruiting moles inside of companies. It's kind of amazing to me.
Yeah. By the way, I'll give Microsoft credit for detailing some of that. So again, go check out that blog. But absolutely, insider attacks are real. And it's not even, it's funny. When people hear the term insider attack, they think it's the person inside doing the hacking. When in reality, it's just one moment of sabotage.
Yeah, they're just opening the door. They just got to unlock the door.
That's it.
But also what's interesting about that is when you think insider attack, you imagine a guy knows a guy kind of thing. No, these are complete strangers. These are complete strangers that are being recruited online to do this.
Correct. People who look at ads that are probably put in very, very odd places, yeah, right? and responding positively, like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's as if, is it a disgruntled employee? Is it an employee who's just looking for a few extra bucks?
Yeah.
The damage to your employer is gigantic. It's right. Not something that anybody should be motivated to do, but goodness, it seems to happen.
It seems like just with no information, just thinking about the psychology of it, it has to be either just a complete and utter mercenary attitude,
yes,
not caring in any way, or or somebody who's got some kind of bone to pick.
Yeah, Tim, if there's a bone to pick somewhere, you're exactly right. The thought of just making a couple bucks, it doesn't even seem right to me. It's somebody who's probably disgruntled in some kind of a way. Goodness.
Well, we don't know how many bucks. Maybe it's a lot of bucks. We don't know that.
Don't know.
Maybe somewhere along. But anyway, I thought that was amazing too. As part of this story, it was the first time I'd been really exposed to that practice as a real thing that was really happening. And I thought that was an eye opener for sure.
Yeah, Tim, there's a lot more to this, right? We're even talking about the AWS, cloud credentials, right, that had potentially been found, lists of names of administrators that were found. I mean, this gets into the mudraking of bad practices by either the third party to Okta or Okta itself. And this isn't about getting into that. And therefore we're kind of going to break our own rules of not getting right to the root cause. But I think that we need to let the investigation to this flesh out a little more. And then we could probably get into the root cause of this in the future. But I think there were some interesting aspects to the story we can start talking about now.
I agree. I mean, there's enough going on that it was worth talking about now. The story is not done at all. And hopefully it will develop and the public will learn more about this. Sometimes we don't, right? Sometimes it all just goes under the covers and nobody ever tells you anything ever again. But if there are trials and stuff, then, it might be that there's public information. We'll keep tracking it. And I think if there's more that's worth reporting, we can come back and give an update then.
You got it, Tim. We certainly will.
Cool. All right, Jason, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This has been Root Causes.